an aside about a compositional and theoretical device called the male gaze. The theory of the male gaze is a second-wave feminist theory, and it began as a way to examine and explain the way women were filmed in 20th century films. Often women were framed compositionally so that it appeared as if the eye of the camera was the eye of a male co-actor watching the woman from an angle slightly above, because stereotypically speaking, most men were taller than most women. This filmed with a downward angle aesthetic was also slightly filtered for the best aesthetic view, and always in a way or at an angle or in a lighting that made the viewer feel like they had some kind of power over the woman being filmed. This was the theory, or part of it anyway, and the theorist who first proposed it, Laura Mulvey, called it the male gaze. Interestingly, this downward angle aesthetic can now be seen most frequently in the 21st century in selfies, but this is likely more an aesthetic choice rather than a comment on the power dynamics between the viewer and the viewed. Obviously, there are now many ways to film all kinds of people, but art historians took a look at Mulvey's ideas and realized that historically, women haven't exactly been in control of their image in the same way men have been in the art that portrays them. Basically, the male gaze is a gendered way of saying a gaze that consumes and or objectifies and is meant to do so. This isn't a case of someone looking at a candid snapshot of someone and the viewer finding them attractive and thinking, yowza. That's a different kind of gaze. And is the product of the person doing the looking, rather than an agreement between the viewer and a purposely constructed image created with the purpose of being sexually available and attractive specifically to viewers who find female bodies sexually appealing. Ong's Le Grand Odalesque was painted by a man for men, and the subject in the painting knows it full well. She looks back at the viewer, but with eyes glazed by some kind of exotic opiate. She is aware, and her body is displayed by the artist for your consumption and objectification, but due to her intoxication, she is in no real position to protest, making her all the more consumable. But Ong's went one step further. Instead of making the viewer mentally objectify the subject for better consumption, he literally changed the human body to make it easier on the eyes and more appealing than reality. Question: can you easily objectify and consume the image of those you feel are your equals, or that you find important to you? In answer to this question, the majority of people find that they can't very easily consume the image of people they feel they know well, are important to them, or are their equals. Often, consumption of an image requires an anonymity, or in the very least a power structure, real or imagined, that places the consumed in a more powerless position than the one doing the consuming. In the early 1800s, it wasn't much different. The objectification of French women, especially known individuals of the time, was not often indulged in. Take Jacques-Louis David's portrait of Madame Récamier, whose painting was an influence on the pose of Ong's Le Grand Odalesque, for example. In David's painting, Juliette Récamier appears clothed, somewhat in possession of her own image, based on her leveled look towards the painting's viewer, and she was a well-known figure on the social scene in the early 1800s Parisian society. In David's painting, the subject of the image may be idealized, but she is not objectified. To do so would have caused a stir in French circles because one doesn't consume one's friends, generally speaking. That was taboo. Therefore, to make his painting a success, Ong's had to make doubly sure that it was clear that the object in his painting was not French. In fact, it had to be clear she wasn't even European. To better showcase things that were meant to be consumed, but to indicate that it wasn't considered culturally wrong to do so, the creator of the image engaged in what is now called othering. Othering is the way members of one group distance themselves from or assert themselves over another by constructing the latter as being fundamentally different, the other. It is a term that is associated with discourses of colonialism, and in particular with the work of Edward Said. Ultimately, it creates an us and them binary that allows for virtuous behaviors on the part of the us and indulgence in taboo behaviors from the them. But who is the us and who is the them? In this case, the them is the Orient. In this time period of the 1800s, that would have been anyone from the Near East, Northern Africa, and the Eastern Mediterranean, although the Far East could be included, and the us is the Occident, the North and Western Hemispheres. In this particular case, Ong's created a clear indication that the woman in his image was not one of us, and therefore was one of them, by including visual cues to establish the woman as a foreign other, which is now what we call orientalizing. Orientalizing, strictly speaking, is the idea of creating an image of someone who is from the Orient, but it's actually a bit more insidious than that. The image it creates is not a true image, it's a fantasized image that is built on imagination and othering, constructed in such a way that those creating and consuming the image didn't feel bad about it because the people in the image were others and not one of us. Orientalizing creates an image made up of assumptions and beliefs about the exotic aesthetics and non-Western behaviors of the people of the lands that were currently being colonized by European countries. By creating beautiful and often sexually charged images and written works, the creators of the Western world strengthen stereotypes and feelings of superiority on the part of the West. In his 80s, Ong painted the Turkish bath. And because Ong's always held to the position that he hated the sensual and emotive romantics, he was always a faithful and true neoclassical artist, it begs a question. Is the Turkish bath very neoclassical? As in, logical, edifying, free of sensory indulgence, and about Roman times? Or is it more sensual, emotion, and natural, as in, romantic? It seems more closely related to the sensual, emotional, and natural. However, always keep in mind that romantic art with a capital R really has nothing to do with romantic or sexual feelings, so this isn't really a romantic piece either. It's just closer to romantic than it is to the neoclassical. Ong's is often considered a proto-romanticist, and this is largely due to the difficulty in labeling the art he created. It does not neatly fit in neoclassical categories, as his subject matter was often so exotic and sensual. Yet, he did not agree with the ideals of the romantics, and his work lacks the sweeping dynamic emotion that typifies the style. At best, he can be positioned as a bridge between the two genres, and yet it seems most likely he was simply an artist who did work that pleased himself whenever he felt so inclined.